man cannot live by bread alone, nor can they live with rice alone. You absolutely have to have these vital minerals and nutrients and vitamins in order to remain healthy. So for much of sub-Saharan Africa, the problem of malnutrition is vitamin A deficiency, iron deficiency, zinc deficiency, and much of the supply of these things comes through your fruit and vegetables. If you don't eat them, you will be unwell.
You actually have an interesting project that encourages people to grow those kinds of vegetables themselves. This is the Small Garden or Community Gardens Project. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
We believe that one of the best ways to combat both malnutrition and the alleviation of poverty is to get people to grow their own vegetables in their own gardens. This doesn't require a huge amount of land. In fact, if you have a 6 by 6 meter plot of vegetables, you can feed a family of four with pretty well all of the vitamin and mineral nutrition you require over a year. There is an important element of social cohesion, of other social type benefits that come with growing gardens, that people who grow them in communities feel supportive, valued.
So with these home gardens and community gardens, I think you've distributed about 25,000 seed packages, if that's correct. How many people could possibly be fed through these gardens?
Well, of course, everybody that wishes to have a vegetable garden, as long as they have access to land, potentially can have one. I mean, vegetable seed is a very cheap input. Yes, you probably do need some additional inputs, potentially some manure, some fertilizer, some maybe even some insecticides if that's a problem. But if you have absolutely no money, you can usually buy one packet of tomato seed. That's 50 US cents. And it's a good investment then under those circumstances. I think there are plenty of areas within urban environments, particularly developing ones, in which people can have access to for one or two seasons. You can grow vegetable plots. And if you don't have that, then you can grow in pots on your roof, your veranda, wherever. We see in shanty towns people growing vegetable gardens in sacks, a whole range of different things. So as long as you're inventive, you can grow vegetables.
Can you tell me about your work to produce vegetables that aren't as sensitive to salt, drought, or high temperatures?
Right. Yes, we are indeed facing the issue of temperature increases, more unpredictable rainfall amounts, which causes flooding, which is a major problem for vegetables. So in the case of salinity, we're working with screening different vegetables for their response to salt. And we have now eggplants and tomatoes that appear to be more salt tolerant than some of the others. In terms of flooding, we found that if you can graft eggplant rootstocks onto tomato scions, tomato tops, you can make them much more resistant to soil-borne diseases and to issues of excess water, and can produce a crop perfectly happily. We are in the process of testing now a new rain shelter in Bangladesh, for example, which allows people to grow tomatoes during the rainy season, whereas before it was impossible. And farmers are very happy because they're getting about five times the price of tomatoes they would do otherwise. We're also studying heat tolerance in sweet pepper, etc.
I read about that, actually, that you, last October, I think you released a study where you talked about the focus on hot air and the focus on air in general would be part of your strategy. Why is that?
In the case of our headquarters in Taiwan, which appear to have a very rapid rate of increase in terms of air temperature of around 4 degrees centigrade per 100 years, that means that over the next 25 years, we have to build in an additional 1 degree centigrade heat tolerance for our breeding material. And you need to know that at the beginning of the breeding program, so you pick the right parents that have heat tolerance, rather than picking ones that you might pick for yield benefits or for disease resistance. Those things are obviously important too, but to make sure that those genes for heat tolerance are in there right at the beginning.
I have a question about the quality of the vegetables that are available on world markets. There have been some reports that the quality or the mineral content in vegetables that are available has degraded in recent years. Is there anything to that report?
Yes, there is literature to suggest that the nutrient density of vegetables in the 1920s and 30s in Europe and North America were higher than they are today.
Why is that?
Well, the reason for that is that breeders, particularly for hybrid vegetable seed are interested in the supermarket. So that means they're looking for shelf life, appearance, colour, consistency of shape, these sorts of things, whereas they have not been paying any attention to nutrient density. Whereas in the indigenous vegetables, they are all, in fact, very nutrient-dense pretty well. And we have plenty of good vegetables around. We just have to make sure that we don't only over-concentrate our efforts on the three or four major ones worldwide.
And what kind of seeds do you distribute?
We particularly pick for the hardy, fast-growing vegetables with a mixture of different nutrient availabilities, some protein, some vitamins, some minerals, etc., and which don't require either massive inputs or huge knowledge to grow properly. So, you know, they're fairly robust and self-contained. We do give it with information sheets that are in cartoon form or in local languages, but seeing is believing, I have to say, when it comes to agriculture.
That also seems to be the case in the case of these school gardens, which are also part of what you're promoting. When kids see how something is grown, do they start to eat the spinach or broccoli they might detest otherwise?
Well, I don't think children naturally detest vegetables. Once they've grown their own, it's in the living laboratory. It's a much more exciting prospect for them to actually consume those vegetables. And the nice thing is that they take the seed home and then they persuade their parents to grow them and that type of thing. So there is a natural extension from the school garden to the much greater, wider community.
We have a last question for you. Do you have a favorite vegetable species that is tasty, easy to grow, and also very nutritious?
Okay, I will go for Malabar spinach. It's an indigenous vegetable of South Asia, slightly mucilaginous, but it makes a really good spinach to go with curry. It's highly nutritious, both in terms of vitamin and mineral content. It's easy to grow. Insects don't bother it to any great extent, and it's one of these vegetables we usually put into the disaster recovery packs because we wouldn't want people to grow things that I don't like.
Malabar spinach it is then. Dr. Dino Keating is the Director General of the World Vegetable Center. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
It's been my pleasure, and I have a very small donation to give to Deutsche Welle here to remind you that vegetables are important for your diet as well. Thank you very much.
We're going to have
indeed
a Deutsche Welle garden now, I think.
Could you tell us what's in there?
You can find an eggplant, pepper and a tomato, but please don't eat it because, in fact, they are made for soaps.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. I'd be happy to come back.